Thank you. So my name is Chen Chang Tang, but I go by CQ, just to make the life easier for others. this paper is a joint work between IBM Research and IBM Software Group Tivoli. So this paper is about performance control for non-interactive systems. But I will give some very brief introduction about interactive web applications first to see how the systems actually differ from what we are building. So for traditional interactive systems, they are used by the interactive users so that the response time is critical. Typically, those systems have to provide almost a sub-second response time in order to be usable by the end users. So naturally, almost all the performance control for those interactive web applications are done by focusing on the response time. One simple example is that when the system is overloaded and the response time exceeds a certain threshold, like 2 seconds or 1 second, then the system stops admitting new requests. This is a very simple admission control mechanism. And for this type of interactive web applications, it's a well-studied area in terms of performance control, like admission control, service differentiation, the threading model, etc. What I'm going to talk about is something a little bit different. In reality, even for the interactive web applications, there are software tools that generate requests to those web applications. So in addition to the interactive user, there are, I call it robots. Basically, those are software tools. They generate some workload to the web application. The most common example of a robot is web crawler. It's everywhere. And there are also other types of robots, like business analytics. In addition to those simple robots like web crawler, nowadays the web services, they also provide APIs to explicitly work with robots. They want to encourage robots to work with their system, like Amazon, eBay, they all want to be a platform. So they encourage robots to work with them. One particular example is Twitter. It was reported in 2007 by the co-founder of Twitter that the traffic from the Twitter API was already 10 times of web traffic, basically those by the interactive users. So this is a very different workload than what the web application was initially designed for, which was shooting for the interactive users. And there are also some other scenarios in which those kind of non-interactive workload might be introduced. For example, some applications, they work with interactive users during daytime, and then are driven by the robot tools at night to do some very heavy-duty business analytics. And I have hands-on experience with some applications like this one. My observation is that the performance characteristics in the two different phases, like at the daytime and during nights, they are very different. So you cannot simply use a response time-based performance control for those systems. So what I observe is that those robots, they significantly impact the performance control. They typically have tons of work to do. That's the reason that we use robots for that. We introduce robots at the first place. So that performance control probably should focus on throughput for those robots. That's one observation. The second observation is that typically those robots, they do not require sub-second response time. Like a crawler, if fetching one page it takes 10 seconds, doesn't matter much. What really matters is that the entire crawling and index update finishes in, for example, 2 days rather than 2 weeks. So throughput is more important than the response time of individual requests, particularly there is no request for sub-second response time. So those are my observations. In particular, we work on one application in which the robots, they rule, they dominate. most of the workloads actually are generated by robots rather than end user. So that's the case for IT service management, IT service management system. Basically, for large scale data centers, these days they are well managed. There are all kinds of monitoring tools. They generate a very high constant monitoring events. And those events are fed into something called IT service management system, which does all the analytics to see how good is the response time, how good is the resource utilization, is there any alerts, or is there any remedy action should be kicked off automatically, something like that. It can also automatically adjust the resource allocation. So this is what the IT service management system does. Most of the workload is actually generated by those robots. It's automated. Ideally, humans should never be involved in this loop so that it's neighbor-free. That's the ideal world. But occasionally, the system admins, they are also involved, but only to resolve some very tricky problems that the system itself cannot resolve. So in this case, the workload generated by the interactive user actually is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of all the workload received by the automated IT service management system. I apologize for that. Okay, so this talk focus on this automated IT service management system. Before the system can manage a data center, it must manage itself. So here we focus on the performance management of this IT service management system itself, not about managing something else. Why it should manage itself? The reason is that sometimes there are radical workload changes. Particularly, for example, if a core router fails in the data center, then you will see the monitoring events generated by, it will surge by several order of magnitude. For example, database cannot talk to the storage system, web server cannot talk with the database, basically everything will break down. The system will receive tons of reports. It's very important that the management system itself can still stand well and try to figure out how to resolve the problem. It's very much like a flash cloud. The management system cannot be knocked down by the flash cloud, otherwise, who is going to save the data center? So for this kind of application, we want to achieve a very high throughput by driving up the resource utilization, and also we want to avoid complete saturation, because occasionally, the administrator might want to log into the system and see how everything works and what are the problems, et cetera. So this is our application domain. This is a particular software that works in that domain. It's an IBM product called the Tivoli NetCool Impact. So it looks very sophisticated. I'm only going to give it a very brief description. So at the top, we have all kinds of robots that generates all kinds of monitoring events, probes, et cetera. And the events are fed into the NetCool Impact. It's called NCI here. It's actually a cluster server. The one in the middle is the master. It's more like a load balancer. And the ones on the bottom, they are sort of like the slaves. However, the master itself also does some event processing. That's because the load balancing works itself is very lightweight. So it has some capacity for additional processing. NetCool Impact server, it works with all kinds of third-party external programs, not offered by IBM at all. The whole reason of having the system is that currently, for almost every hardware, every operating system, every middleware, and every application, it comes with its own monitoring and management tool. What we really need is end-to-end monitoring and management. So that's what this NetCool Impact offers. It's more like an integration platform to tie everything together. So it's a key that it works with a large number of third-party programs. That's the reason also makes it much more difficult to do performance control, because we cannot assume much knowledge about the performance characteristics of those external programs. There are so many. So as the events comes into the event processing engine, every event is processed by some script written by the system administrator. And the script might interact with all kinds of other programs. The script is a proprietary language. It's very easy to use. You can easily access a large number of other programs by writing very simple statements. So here are the keys. We're trying to control the performance for the event processing engine. Here, the key is the concurrency level. If we try to process too many events concurrently, then we might actually decrease the performance. So as I said, the performance control is difficult because we don't know everything in the environment. And also, the bottleneck can be any resource, almost anywhere, like CPU, memory, et cetera. And also, we cannot greedily maximize the performance without considering resource contention with others. So it's almost certain that we can only take a very simple approach in this case. We have to take a black box approach because we cannot rely on many, many assumptions. Recall that the key thing that we want to control is the concurrency level in the event processing engine, which determines how many events are being processed concurrently. Inside of the engine, one thread is used to process one event, so it boils down to the number of event processing threads. That's what's on the x-axis here. So the y-axis is the event processing throughput. This graph shows how the throughput changes as the number of event processing threads change. Basically, initially, as the number of threads increase, the throughput also increase almost linearly and then gradually slows down because of the saturation. So the maximum throughput is reached when the bottleneck resource is fully utilized, 100% utilized. Beyond that point, if we further increase concurrency, then the throughput is actually going to degrade slightly because of the overhead in managing resource contention. If we further increase the concurrency level, we are going to move into thrashing, for example, memory thrashing, and the performance is going to decrease radically. What we want to do is that we want to follow the curve to find a place like the 0.7 that is very close to the maximum throughput, but still stay away from the maximum throughput so that the bottleneck resource is highly utilized but not fully saturated. So the intuition is shown by the steps here. We basically increase the number of threads until that we observe the throughput is almost saturated, and then we move away from the saturation point. So that's the intuition. the algorithm is controlled by this state machine. So typically, the system runs in the steady state, using a constant number of threads to process the events. Continuous comes in. Then periodically, it goes into the base state, try to explore whether a better configuration exists. So in the base state, it reduces the threads by certain fraction. So that serves as the starting point line along the curve. Then it moves from the base state into the add thread state. It repeatedly adds threads by p% every time and try to see how the throughput changes. If the throughput improves by q% with the changing thread, then that means good. We are climbing over this steep curve here, right? So basically, we go from step 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. All those are in the add thread state. If we observe the throughput is almost saturated, basically, it does not give you a q% improvement in throughput, then it moves into the max state and then further moves into the remove thread state. Basically, try to very cautiously remove some threads to avoid saturation. So this is how the algorithm works. It's very simple. Initially, we have a much more complicated solution that considers all kinds of features. But gradually, we get rid of those features that that do not provide very significant benefits. So we want to make this as simple as possible because we want to put this into a product implementation. Okay, the parameters are very critical. So every time we add threads by p percent, and then we expect improvement in throughput by q percent, this condition states that the q, the improvement in throughput must be significant. Otherwise, we shouldn't try to add threads anymore. The second condition says that in the base state, we must reduce threads significantly. Otherwise, it might not be friendly enough in the face of resource contention. There are some derivation in the paper, so details will not be discussed here. So the situation is that if these two conditions are satisfied, then if there exists an uncontrolled computing program, then the net cool impact will share about 44% to 45% of the bottleneck resource. So we cannot assume that net cool impact runs in one environment without any competition. So if there are two instances of net cool impact, they can also share resources friendly with each other. Here we want to show that the algorithm is friendly, but it also can achieve high resource utilization. We use a QE model to show that as the condition changes, our algorithm can properly adjust the number of threads to maintain a very high CPU utilization. So this is a downstream analysis. The experiments will be shown later. So the key is that we make a decision based on throughput. And the key question is how to measure throughput accurately. In a very noisy environment, this is actually very challenging. The first problem we have to solve is that what if there's idle time between events arrive? Events here, basically, those are the requests. We have to exclude the idle time in the throughput calculation. Otherwise, we are actually measuring the event's arrival rate rather than really processing power. So the throughput is measured by excluding the idle time, excluding all the gaps. That's the first key. The second key is that we want to measure the throughput, but we also want to minimize the measurement samples because those are done online. We formulate this as an optimization problem. Basically, there are two configurations that we want to compare, configuration one and configuration two. N1 and N2 are the samples from each configuration. We want to minimize the total samples, but we also want to guarantee that the variance of the measured throughput is small enough so that we make correct decisions most of the time. So this problem can be solved using the results looks like this. The details are in the paper. So basically, this will guide us to do the online measurement. The third key for the throughput measurement is that there are some very, very large noises in real system. In particular, our system is implemented on top of Java, so garbage collection poses problems. So sometimes the garbage collection can take even as long as 20 seconds. So we have to exclude those outliers in the measurement. So this is a known problem, and there are all kinds of solutions. We found that simply dropping the 1%, not just the samples, will give us a very good result already. We don't care about the outliers at the lower end, because we only care about something like a Java garbage collection, which makes the system very slow. So this is the experimental setup of our tests. So here, this is also one product from IBM, which gathers all the events and then feed into the NetCool Impact cluster. The cluster works with the MySQL server and also can work with another web service program. The web service also has another database locally located, so in turn it has one database. In some experiments, we vary the network latency because we want to see that effect. And in other experiments, we also vary the service time of some components that we can control because we can see how it works under different conditions. First of all, I want to show that the scalability is very good. It's almost linear. So this figure shows how the system works when CPU is the bottleneck. The x-axis is the time of the experimentation. This right axis is the number of threads, which is the control knobs. The next left y-axis is the throughput. So the curve on the on the top is the throughput. So every cycle here is one tuning cycle. And on the bottom is the number of threads. We can see that the throughput changes accordingly as the number of threads change. This graph shows the resource utilization, basically CPU utilization. Here, the web service server is the bottleneck. The CPU utilization is somewhere between 90% and 100%. This is exactly what we want to achieve, but it's not fully saturated. So this shows that it works very well for the CPU as the bottleneck scenario. This one shows memory thrashing scenario. Here, initially it works very well. Then at this point in time, sometime around 500 seconds, we sort of intentionally change the scripts executed by the electrical impact engine so that it acts, it needs tons of memory on the web server, on the web service. So it introduces actually, it moves the machine into thrashing. Here, the red curves here are the number of page swaps monitored on that server. You can see that it's huge. So the algorithm detects the change in throughput. So it tries to gradually reduce the number of threads. By this point in time, the system is thrashing free. However, during the next tuning cycle, it tries to increase threads again. Unfortunately, the system moves into thrashing again, but it recovers from that gradually. So eventually, it reduces the number of threads to about 40, which is thrashing free. Here you still see some spikes. That's the periodical exploration. So this example is very interesting. It shows how it works when disk is a bottleneck resource. Again, here at the time, roughly 250 seconds, the configuration is changed so that now the disk is a bottleneck. The system has to adapt to the new situation. It gradually reduces the number of threads. So interestingly, as the number of threads is reduced, the disk throughput actually increase significantly. So there's a big jump over here. And over time, as the threads is further reduced, we see a second improvement in disk throughput. This is very interesting. It's because of some unknown activity in the kernel and we are not familiar with. But this shows that even if we don't know what's going on internally, the algorithm can actually work pretty well even in this scenario. So eventually, it gradually reduces the number of threads so that the throughput is slightly lower than the maximum. That's exactly what we want to do. This example shows what happens when there is an uncontrolled computing program. In our environment, we don't assume that we control everything. So it works well until this point. At this point, we introduce another program on the web service server so that you can see the network impact server CPU utilization is almost halved because this bottleneck, part of its resources is used by another program. So during this period of time, the CPU is 100% utilized because of the competition. So what we do is that it gradually reduces the number of threads. Then eventually here, it is relieved of saturation. It's no longer a 100% straight line. So here, at this point, the external program terminates. Then our algorithm detects this and increases the number of threads accordingly to drive up the CPU utilization from roughly about 45% back to about 90% again. So this shows that our system is very adaptive. In terms of related work, there are tons of related work in different categories. The first one is a greedy parameter search. The issue with this one is that it's too greedy. It does not consider resource contention with some uncontrolled programs. The second one is the TCP style congestion control. Actually, we borrowed a lot of ideas from TCP. But one key issue in a protocol like TCP Vegas is that to assume minimum round trip time is the mean service time, which is not true for general distributed systems. That's what we want to handle. Control theory has also been widely applied to performance control. But most solutions are not sufficiently black box enough for our scenario. And if we apply that to network impact, then we need to monitor resource utilization directly for all external programs. That's very difficult because they are provided by the third-party vendors. And the queuing theory has also been applied before. They typically assume a static topology and also a known bottleneck. For future work, there are two key questions. The first one is that can we actually get TCP friendly for general distributed systems? We know that we can get this for network, but can we get it for general distributed systems? Currently, our system is not friendly without any coordination for three or more instances. Second question is that to somehow solve the first problem, can we estimate, this is just one example, can we estimate the utilization of Google's internal servers by just observing the changes in query response time? So intuitively, when it's very busy, the response time will be high, right? But can we quantify that? This turns out to be very difficult. It's doable in some scenario, but what's the most general scenario that it is still doable? This is the fundamental question. So the take-home message is that we have to revisit the performance control for systems that handle workloads generated by software tools. I call it robots. There are mixed workloads. In some scenarios, it's a mixed human and robot workload, like Twitter. Twitter even have more robot workload than the human workload. For our system, network impact is mostly robot workload, but there's still some human workload. There are also some systems that are entirely robot workload, like Hadoop. There's no interactive user. So for those systems, the question I want to pose is that how we should revisit the performance control. So this is my last slide.
So this is very interesting work, and so what I'm wondering is, maybe I missed that. So you have this control loop where you increase the number of threads slowly and observe. How do you know when it's the right point to observe after adding a thread? Because sometimes, I guess, with very compute-intensive threads, you would get an immediate feedback, but sometimes with memory or disk-intensive ones, I could imagine that it takes maybe, I don't know, 20 seconds until you actually reach to the point.
Right. That's a very good question. So the key question is that how can we accurately measure throughput? Sometimes it takes a long time to measure, sometimes it takes a very short time to measure, right? That's exactly what this chart wants to show. So basically, how long to measure is determined dynamically. Basically, this shows that we only need to do a sufficient number of measurements if we can guarantee that the measurement is already accurate enough. That's formulated as this problem, then it can be solved. Details in the paper.
Okay, thanks. And another one. So it seems that you reduce the number of threads by a percentage and then increase by a static number?
No, both are percentage.
Both are percentage. Thanks.
Yes.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. So currently, it seems like you're dealing with a single pool of threads that are more or less doing similar work. But there's lots of times in systems where there are multiple pools of threads. So, you know, you have a DB or flush pool of threads, and you have a prefetcher set of pool of threads, and so on and so forth. Do you have any ideas on whether this scheme could be extended to that sort of a scenario?
That's actually a very good question. So this is also related to one limitation of this work. This work only starts with a single thread pool, but in practice, there are different types of requests. This should be handled by different thread pools. We thought about doing that. But then the case is that we have to tune each thread pool separately. That's still doable, but that might increase the complexity of the existing algorithm.
Okay, I would love to see some future work on that.
Right. But we haven't done that yet.
Okay. Okay. So you had made an interesting, you had raised an interesting question in your summary slide, which was, can we apply TCP style control to distributed problems in general? Since it's a question, I'll try to answer it by saying that I think so. So, for example, the work that we did publish at FAST this year tried to use FAST TCP to solve distributed resource control in storage systems. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that work. But I encourage you to check that out.
Right.
One interesting thing out of this work, though, is that if you have multiple pools of threads, then what if you wanted proportional control between them, so priorities? Because right now, you just reach 50%. What if one application was more important than the other application?
Right. That's also one open question we have not addressed yet.
All right. Let's thank the speaker.